Hey, welcome to Night School. And I'm going to try to talk over this holiday rush hour traffic next to me. If I had a magic power right now, I would stop all these cars from moving and silence them. But they're my audience. These cars next to me, they're my audience. What little audience I have is people who are eager to get home, people who have no clue that I'm actually performing for them right now. But anyway, what I wanted to talk about today is opposite land. And that idea, you know, you say opposite land, it sounds like some cartoony thing where someone goes through a tube, goes through a tunnel, and they go through a channel, and they suddenly are in a place where up is down, and red is green, and whatever else. You know, it's very cartoony, it's slapsticky. Either that, or it's just some sort of almost mythological, dreamlike place. What comes to mind is Legend of Zelda, if you know that game. Of course you do. It's like still one of the most famous fucking things. People have tattoos of it. They have new games out, but at least in the older games, you would enter into this portal, and it would take you into like the dark world. It was this dark, dreamlike, alternate reality. And I'm not going to talk about alternate realities this time, although I guess I am. But you'd go into this different version where it's darker, it's more dreamlike. Someone who might be a little kid in the world that you're used to is now like this rabbit. That's something from one of the games. It was like someone who was previously just this kid running around is suddenly this weird rabbit-like man. Just things like that. You go through a portal and suddenly it's this weird sort of opposite world. The light world and the dark world. But the opposite land I'm talking about here is just the opposite land that you enter by expressing something that's the opposite of what you feel. You think about people who are like, I don't care what anyone thinks. I don't care what anyone thinks. And that person is almost always really saying underneath that, I really desperately care what you all think. I desperately care so much that I'm going to try my damnedest to express the opposite, to put up this fucking armor. You hear that motorcycle? That's my biggest fan. That motorcycle off in the distance is my biggest fan. Just eager for me to say that some expression of like not caring is somebody putting up armor. That guy loves that part. Every time I give this speech, that guy in the motorcycle revs his engine. But I mean, that's an obvious one, especially in the age of social media. That was, you know, one of the first like real big things, you know, that you started to see in the age of Twitter and Facebook and all that was people being like, I don't care what anyone thinks. I'm just going to keep saying exactly what I always say. You know, and that was, you know, you saw like teenagers saying that because suddenly people had this audience, you know, everybody suddenly became this kind of like subversive comedian or submersive. There we go. Speaking of opposite land. Subversive and submersive, but everyone started to feel like this subversive, you know, like some sort of rebel, because, you know, whether it was people talking, expressing political or social views, making off-color humor, off-color comedy, whatever it was, you started to see people, and that was where like the term haters came about that you don't really see used seriously anymore, unfortunately. Because I feel like now's the time to use that word. We've reached a point where now's the time to start talking about your haters. It wasn't 10 years ago when everybody started to talk about their haters. Now's the time. You know, it's all going to come full circle again, just like everything else. There'll be a time when people start referring to their haters once again. But all of that is exactly what I'm talking about. People who were expressing that, oh, I don't care about my haters. You know, those were the exact people who were just desperately concerned with people who they thought didn't like them or didn't approve of them. Just one sec. Okay, it's still recording. We're still recording. Yeah, it's sort of like in the Bible, there's the story about the shepherd who has, I believe he has 100 sheep. And one of the sheep goes away and is wandering in the mountains, and he has 99 sheep who follow the rules and do as he says, who, you know, follow this shepherd. But the one is up in the mountains. And so which is the one that he cares about? Which is the one that preoccupies the shepherd? Of course, it's the one that's wandering in the mountains. So he goes off to find it. And I think that story is told in relation to the prodigal son, you know, the one where he has three sons. This farmer has three sons. And one of the sons is kind of a wild man. He goes to town, he blows his money, he doesn't work the farm. He goes off wandering, doing whatever he does that's not good, that's not moral, that's not what a good farmer's son would do. Meanwhile, the two other sons work the farm. They're good boys. They're good boys. And who's the son that the father is the most preoccupied with? Of course, it's the son who's going around, you know, philandering, who's not doing what a good farm boy should do. And when that son comes back, it's this huge deal. The son comes back to the farm and he's realized the error of his ways, or he's gotten out of his system. And the father is just ecstatic. You know, it's this big deal. I believe he throws a feast. I know there's some kind of celebration. And the other sons, or at least one of the other sons, who's been good the entire time, one of the 99 sheep in the other story, comes up to the father and is like, you know, he was off doing all this bad stuff. Meanwhile, we've been good this entire time, and we've never gotten this kind of celebration. And the father was like, I wish I could remember what the father says, but essentially the father explains that because he believed that son was lost, you know, regaining him back, I don't know, man. I wish I could. I wish I had a better way to wrap up my retelling of that story. But essentially, the father explains that, it's because the son was lost that creates this need for celebration when he returns. And I think that's kind of where all of that, like, I don't care what anybody thinks. I don't care what these people think of me. You know, in the same way, that's actually truly an expression of, like, I care so much about what my naysayers say. I feel like it kind of relates to those old biblical stories where it's like you're always going to be preoccupied with the ones that you feel you've lost. And I think it's true also for performers. When a performer has an audience full of people who are all into what they're doing, they're all fans, they're all engaged, they're happy, but there's that one person who's heckling or who is otherwise just clearly unhappy, and the performer makes eye contact with them, who is the performer going to think about? Unless they've really done some great work on themselves, who are they going to think about? They're going to think about that person who's unhappy in the back corner. Their mind is going to be focused on making that person entertained or claiming that lost person. Whereas all the people who are into the show, not to say they aren't important, in the same way that, you know, the farmer in the Bible, his two good boy sons, you know, they're still important to him. And, you know, he makes that clear. But at the same time, it's like they were never lost. So there's no real feeling, there's no ecstasy of reclaiming what was lost in that situation. In the same way that a performer, you know, if they suddenly notice that that person sulking in the back corner who hates the show, if that person suddenly laughs at a joke, say you're a comedian, suddenly you get that person to crack and laugh at a joke. That is so much bigger than just that eager fan who's sitting at the front of the stage the entire night cracking up. That's so much more important. So it makes sense to me why people are so preoccupied with people who they think don't like them. It's the same thing, and it's that negativity bias as well, where we are often preoccupied by the bad in a situation. We kind of focus on that. You know, we overlook all of the positive reinforcement we receive, and we focus on that one little negative piece of info that hits us, that one little negative comment. You walk into work and you're in just a beautiful blouse, and you know it's a beautiful blouse. the tag on it, the tag on the inside of the blouse says beautiful blouse, beautiful blouse. And you go to work and 10 people say to you, that's a beautiful blouse. But one person says, I don't think that blouse is beautiful. Or even just, you know, it might not even be that negative. It might just be, that's a nice blouse. It's not beautiful, but it's nice. And what are you going to think about? Are you going to think about the 10 people who called it a beautiful blouse? Or are you going to think about the person who just kind of gave you a lukewarm, half-assed, you know, barbed compliment? You know, there was a barb on that compliment. That barb is going to have so much weight. And that's that negativity bias. And there are all sorts of evolutionary explanations for why we focus on those negative bits of information rather than like a wealth of positive information. And it really does have to do with survival. Because we feel like, oh, we need to hold on to that negative thing because it could kill me or it could cause me harm. But we live in a time when we don't need to focus on those quite as much, you know? It's still good to, you know, look out for yourself. It's still good to be aware of the things that could potentially harm you physically, mentally, in any number of ways. But we don't need to wake up in the morning just fearing that predator or that, I heard that the land up north, I hear that their crops aren't growing because the winter has lasted this long. This is the longest winter we've ever had and the crops aren't growing. You know, that makes sense. You know, all that stuff makes sense. Oh, I hear the wolves are down, coming close to the village this year. You know, that all makes sense. But we've kind of taken it to such a degree that every little bit of negative information is something we hold on to in an age where that is not information that is going to harm us or kill us. And in doing that, we basically harm ourselves. I was going to talk about opposite land, not that specifically, not just the whole negativity bias, but I feel like it is closely related. But that was just one example of, you know, the way that we live in opposite land, where we express ourselves, you know, I don't care about this thing. I couldn't care less about it. Meanwhile, we're essentially, our insides are in actuality screaming, I care so much about this. And you see it too when people are like, I don't like people. You know, that beautiful statement that's so easy to say. It's so easy to think that you feel. I don't like people. I just don't like people. As a people myself, as a person, I don't like people. Because there are all sorts of reasons not to like people or even hate people. You know, you think about the person who says, I hate people. I hate people. And whenever I hear that, what I really hear is, I am so desperate for a meaningful connection. Because I'm not going to say that they have positive, I'm not going to assume that that person has positive relationships or positive interactions with people, because when you go into situations with that kind of negative outlook, you inevitably do kind of poison every interaction you have, or you reject the good interactions you have, or you dismiss them completely. Like I was talking about the shepherd who has 99 sheep who have stayed in the flock, and then he has the one that wanders off. For some people, they have 99 lost sheep and one that has stayed by their side. And with those people, the sad situation that plays out is those people will look at that one sheep who has stayed next to them and they'll say, God damn those 99 other sheep. Like, God damn those 99 other sheep who have wandered off. Meanwhile, not acknowledging that this one sheep has stayed loyal and isn't much of a flock, but it's at least stayed loyal. And they'll say, I sure wish I had that flock back, which essentially poisons their potential relationship with the one sheep who's stuck by their side. But I do acknowledge that some people do have 99 lost sheep. And they might have been born into a situation where, you know, half of those sheep were already gone and leaving. And so it's not really their fault that they weren't able to hold on to the sheep. So it's not necessarily saying like that everybody just goes into life, everybody who has a shitty situation goes into life just poisoning anything good. Because some people are just born into a really bad situation, and you have to acknowledge that. If you're born with 99 of your sheep running away, and you just have one left, or maybe all of them are gone, maybe you're that person who all of your fucking sheep left you from day one. You didn't have a chance. Poverty, abuse, terrible parenting, abusive parenting, trauma. You know, you were just at the bottom end of bad luck your entire life. It's very hard to criticize that person or to tell that person they're responsible for what they've done or their situation. But there still has to be a way for that person to, you know, start reclaiming some of their sheep, to start somehow refocusing themselves. And I don't think that I'm necessarily in a position to tell those people how to do that. But long story short, I understand why some people say, I hate people. I hate them. You know, I understand that. How could I not? I've always struggled with that compulsion toward misanthropy. I've always struggled with that. As someone who's had a good life, as someone who's had a lot of positive reinforcement, and has somehow managed to have, you know, generally positive relationships with people, generally. You know, I'm not going to say anything's perfect or there haven't been low valleys along the way in my life or anything, but, you know, I even just having a relatively good life and all of that, I've still felt that compulsion toward misanthropy, and I'm glad that I have to struggle with it, and it makes, when I don't let that side of me win, it makes it that much better. You know, and it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be happy-go-lucky. It doesn't mean anything like that. But ultimately, when I am feeling that urge, when I do feel, people are really rubbing me the wrong way, just about everybody. The good people in my life, the strangers who are like acting like fucking maniacs in their cars, everybody seems to be rubbing me the wrong way. I feel that slight urge to hate people right now. You know, I also recognize that when I feel that way, ultimately what I feel, and, you know, sure, it sounds like sensitive bullshit, it sounds like stupid therapy talk, but it's true. Like, when I'm feeling that way, what I'm really kind of thinking is like, man, it would be great to just have a positive connection right now, to just to be able to, like, feel like some flow with humanity, that I'm moving in the same direction as humanity, it's moving the same direction as me, all that bullshit about being one. You know, it'd be really nice if I could feel that right now. And, you know, that whole, I'm gonna just say I hate people, or actually hate people, you know, that whole thing, it all comes from a place of wanting to be part of that flow. You know, if you recognize that, you'll realize, like, how silly it sounds to be, like, suddenly hating people. You know, you don't want to turn, you know, when someone says, oh, I hate people, I don't like people, you don't want to turn around and say to them, oh, what you're really expressing is, you know, how desperate you are for a connection to those people. You don't want to say that to somebody. That's like saying to somebody who's panicking, don't panic. Or someone who has like a bee on their nose, like, don't freak out. I'm going to tell you something that's going to make you freak out, but whatever you do, don't freak out. You know, it's so hard to bring this up to people. And that's another aspect, is like, you know, you want to speak the truth to people. You want to say something that's true and accurate to people, because when you don't, that's another version of the opposite land that I was talking about, where you, it's not just the opposite land that we live in ourselves with the way that we express things that we ourselves are not actually feeling. It's not just that, but it's also in what we say to other people, where we have that tendency to be like, you know, if we do tell someone a harsh truth, we'll be like, hey, don't blame me. I just tell it like it is. I'm from New York. In New York, we just tell it like it is. You know, there's that whole attitude too, which isn't really helpful. And, you know, and that's another aspect of the whole opposite land thing, is so many people, when they're talking about themselves, do enter that opposite land where they're not telling the truth about how they actually feel, but they will jump at the opportunity to climb out of opposite land and tell the truth about other people and to other people, and they justify it by saying, I'm just telling it like it is, because it feels good for those people to lash out. And of course, somebody who's being dishonest with themselves and is living in an internal opposite land, of course the person who's in internal opposite land is gonna want nothing more than to lash out at people outside of them. So it's so often, it's like we'll be like, oh, well, I'm gonna tell everybody else the truth about them. I just tell it like it is. I don't care what anybody thinks. I care what everybody thinks. I'm just going to tell it like it is. Or I'm just going to, you know, lash out. So what they're really saying is, you know, I care what everybody thinks. And that causes me a great deal of anxiety and fear. So I'm going to lash out. And that lashing out, it might be the truth. You might very well be telling people the absolute truth. But do they need to hear it? Do you need to use it as a weapon? Probably not. You know, I think that you can start by being honest with yourself. You know, climb out of the manhole that took you down to your internal opposite land and ask yourself, well, do I really need to, is it really my job to pull other people out of their manhole, out of their opposite land? Probably not. In the same way that I was just saying how you don't say to somebody who's in like some spell of misanthropy, when someone says, I hate people, I hate people. When someone says that, you don't say, oh no, what you're really feeling is a desperate need to connect to people. And since you're not making that connection happen, you've decided to just hate people. You know, you don't say that to them. I'm just telling it like it is. You don't say that to them, because that's actually not going to help them climb out of that manhole, out of that sewer. It's not going to help them, you know, see the ladder, you know, and move that manhole cover like a Ninja Turtle and peep their head out. It's not going to help them. But you can do that to yourself. You can do that for yourself. And it's difficult to do, but you just have to start making small movements, develop a discipline around it. The discipline of exiting opposite land. It's going to be the name of my next New York Times bestseller. My last one was called Just Telling It Like It Is. Telling It Like It Isn't. When telling it like it is telling it like it isn't. Notes from opposite land. I would say be very mindful of when you're expressing something about yourself that isn't true. And it will, you know, it will give people less room to, if you do feel attacked, like if you are someone who feels like people are out to get you, whether it's true or not, if you feel like people are out to get you, I would say start out by being less dishonest with yourself, for one. And you'll find that suddenly people aren't attacking you as much. And whether that's because the illusion of people attacking you has been lifted, or people just have less reason to attack you because you're a more honest person, I don't know which one it is. It's almost like a chicken or the egg argument. But you'll probably find that you feel much less attacked. You'll feel like when somebody glances at you at the grocery store and your first thought is, they're thinking bad thoughts about me. That guy buying the chicken, he's thinking that my blouse sucks. He thinks this blouse isn't beautiful. You know, instead of thinking that, you're going to be like, oh, he's a fucking human animal in a grocery store hunting ground, and he glanced at me because I entered into his peripheral vision, and we're all fucking crazy sensory beings who look around a lot. And maybe his eyebrows are a little sharper and thicker than yours, and they make him look like he's like scowling all the time. Maybe he has resting dick face. Maybe the woman next to him has resting bitch face. And when they glanced at you, they weren't thinking about your blouse at all. Maybe they were just thinking about like not running into you. Maybe they were like, oh, there's a person next to me. I'm not gonna push my grocery cart that way. Maybe, you know, but we're very paranoid. Our self-esteem is very low, and we are very paranoid that other people are trying to stab at our self-esteem. And we're often very afraid of the most obvious thing about us. That's the funny thing, the sad but funny things. It's like, as someone who grew up fat, as someone who was a fat kid for many years, I remember like having, you know, and it probably didn't bother me as much as it did other people. For me, like, I always had this thought in the back of my mind where I was like, I just know this isn't my ideal form. You know what I mean? Like, I wasn't like, oh God, I hate myself for being fat. God, what a loser. I'm gross. I never thought that way. I just remember feeling like I can do better than this. I feel like I'm better than this, you know? Like even just the way clothes fit. It's not even about like the way other people see you. It's just as simple as like, oh, clothes just made me feel gross. Clothes clung to me in weird ways, you know, and shit like that. It's not even about other people's perceptions. It was just like, oh, you know, this just doesn't feel good. I don't like sweating this easily. I don't like that I can't move around as well as I would like. You know, that was the real issue. It was just like, this is not ideal. But at the same time, it's like, as someone who didn't just hate myself, you know, for my gut or whatever, like, I still would go into situations and I would think, oh, I really hope nobody points out the most obvious thing about me. You know, I sure hope nobody mentions that I'm fat. You know, you think about that. You go into a situation and you're just terrified that somebody's, even if they're not making fun of you, you're worried that someone's even just gonna describe you. Think about going into a situation and your greatest fear is that somebody is going to describe you. That's fucked up. And, you know, nobody should make someone feel bad for the way they look or anything like that. I don't believe in that. But we should also try to make ourselves tough. And if there's something we truly don't like about ourselves, we should change it. And we should, and if that means improvement or just change, you don't even have to phrase it around like self-improvement or that there's some optimum way of living. Just if it makes you feel like you're closer to your ideal form, do it. Because so much of that self-esteem talk is just bad news, man. The whole self-esteem movement is just bad, bad news. And the idea that you are exactly the way you should be, and it's everybody else's fault that you are that way, or that you don't feel okay about it. I think is kind of how that weird, twisted game is played. It's like, you know, I think a very good game is the game where we teach people not to hate themselves. Because that's just, you don't do that. You don't hate yourself. You're not going to get anywhere by doing that. And it's going to poison everything you do. You're going to start losing your sheep very quickly. But you should tell people that, hey man, maybe this isn't your ideal form. And maybe it's very fucking possible if you do these things, you can reach a more ideal form. And even once you're there, you can continue to push yourself. And this is not just a physical thing. This isn't about fitness. This isn't about anything like that, although that's part of it. It's mental more than anything. It's expressing yourself the way that you truly feel. And once again, you should never mistake that for telling other people how you truly feel about them. That's not really your business, you know? This isn't about you saying to somebody else, like, you could lose some weight. Even if that's true, that's not your business. Your business has nothing to do with them. Your business is your own. Your business is getting out of opposite land, rung by rung. Even if it takes several ladders, some of them horizontal ladders, and you feel like you're just crawling like to nothing, to the side, back and forth. Even if it no longer feels like a ladder and you feel like you're just kind of like hanging out in dead air, just keep fucking climbing. Get the fuck out of opposite land.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave, this golden land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, I see a land where children can run free. So take